CT scans are sometimes absolutely necessary, but there are always risks, and you've got a story about how you balance those risks and benefits and if you actually need a scan.
Yeah. If you look at data from the United States, where they actually looked at 93 million CAT scans performed in 62 million patients in 2023, they projected in this research that that would result in approximately 103,000 future cancers. And they're talking about lung cancer, they're talking about bowel cancer, they're talking about leukemia, breast cancer. It depends where the CAT scan's been done and the exposure to radiation. And based on this study, they estimate that over time, if CAT scans go on at the current rate in the United States, 5% of all cancers could have CAT scans to blame for it. So this is a serious issue. It's one that's being monitored by Associate Professor John DeCampo, who actually is a radiologist, a practicing radiologist, has also been a health administrator, and he's very concerned about it.
The regulator, that's the PANSA, says that in Australia there's about 5 million scans done a year, and that's much less than in America. Well, we're one-third less than in America. So their rates of cancer, we might expect ours to be one-third less because we do one-third of the CTs that the Americans would do.
Now, PANSA has made a comment on CT scanning or looked at this area, and they did it in April of this year. I think that they published it in May, where they said, oh, well, CT scanning technology's changed. You get a lower dose because it's a faster scan. And the extrapolations in the US study were based on radiation exposure in Hiroshima and what was found after that. And not, these are not necessarily relevant to ascribing risk. What's your comment on that?
Well, earlier on that same paper, Norman, they said, we've always known about these risks. There's nothing new in this paper. The risks are well known. And those risks are based on the atomic bomb dropped in Japan. And they've been gone over with a fine tooth comb for the last 25 years. And no one has said that's not a risk. Everyone says it is a risk. Actually, including a PANSA says the risk is well known. So I think the time has come to sort of do something about it rather than hope that scans will be used in an evidence-based way. We can do better than hope, I think.
We'll come back to the evidence-based way in a moment. So when you talk to radiologists, and I predict if I talk to the College of Radiology about this, they'll say, look, CT scanning 25 years ago was a long process, involved process. You're sitting in the scanner for ages. Now you're in the scanner for a few minutes and it's transformed and the radiation dose is lower. What do you say to that?
Two things. CT is fabulous. It's so accurate in finding cancers or useful in trauma. It's across the board. It's been a revolution in imaging. So I wouldn't want to in any way dismiss the value of CT. But there's a risk because the pictures are so great now. They do require radiation and perhaps more radiation than those back at the start. And we have improved the detectors. Well, we've improved the software so that small patients get less than big patients. So there's been a lot of improvement in the way the scans are done, but they do involve radiation. And the radiation doses in the recent article are the current doses, actually from 2019, if I remember. But these are current doses on current machines.
But is there any sense of who's really at risk here? So is it, you know, I'm getting my coronary arteries checked and I have a CT scan of the heart and I have one in my 40s. Does that put me at risk? Or is it somebody who's got a chronic illness and is having multiple CT scans? I mean, or is it just a graded risk depending on how many scans you have in life?
Yeah, the number of scans, but each scan has got a risk. Now, age is another factor. So if you're a one-year-old or a six-month-old, then the more scans you have, of course, the risk will be higher. And some of the CT scans are quite complex these days. Say, looking at the liver, you might go into the machine and have four scans before you come out.
Now we come to the question of how essential the scans are and how evidence-based they are. Do we know what proportion of CT scans are inappropriate?
About a third of scans are not indicated and not useful.
Can you give me an example of the sort of scans that...
Oh, from last week, asthma, CT chest, please. Or woke up this morning with back pain, CT back, please.
So this is from your personal experience of requests.
But it's the biggest culprit is probably in back pain where we know that in 6 weeks, 95 or 98% of back pain will get better by itself. So that unless there's a red flag, then waiting is the best plan. Arthritis would be the next commonest one, with plain films increasingly being replaced by CT of the knee, please. The results are the same for a first visit. You know, the knee looks a bit sore.
It's a complicated story. I mean, one is that you as the radiologist are serving the referring doctor, so they know the patient, and who are you to say no? The other is conflict of interest financially, which is that you've got, and we've covered this story before, you've got heavy corporatization of private equity and even listed companies in the radiology space, where they are telling their shareholders how much they're making out of the volume of scans that they're doing. And therefore, if you say, we don't really need to do this scan, back to the GP, you're reducing the earning. I mean, there are lots of forces here against rational imaging.
Yes, and I think I want to talk about rational, not rationing. There are forces. There's also the medico-legal force on busy general practitioners not wanting to, inverted commas, miss anything. That's a force, particularly if you happen to be on a visa, that provides an extra anxiety for practitioners. And the financial drivers of the radiology industry doesn't really foster best practice. It's not to say my colleagues wouldn't do their very best each day to do what they think's best for their patients, but there are drivers around us all the time, and it's hard to ignore them.
So what's the solution for this? I remember, and I don't know whether it sustained itself, Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston had a problem with exponentially rising radiology costs. And what they did was that when a referring doctor referred for a particular scan and it looked inappropriate according to the clinical notes on the order form, they sent an email back to the doctor saying, in this situation, it's not really indicated, and you know, they gave some facts and figures. We're not stopping you doing the scan, but you'll have another think about it. Did that work?
I don't know that example, but evidence-based imaging has proven very, very difficult to introduce in any country. You know, you gave an example where it might have worked, but even the guidelines for lung cancer nodules, they are not religiously followed, actually. You know, people still having follow-ups when the follow-ups are not indicated. It's a great difficulty in doing the right thing.
So if you were a dictator, what would you say should happen?
Oh, the dictator, yes, if only. I think the solutions, being a benign dictator, would be to first make MRI more available to general practitioners for red flag spinal imaging. So that's cervical, thoracic and lumbar. Let's open up the gateway, but that would replace CT of the spine for red flag cases.
And just to be clear, what you're talking about here is, this is not straightforward back pain. You've got weight loss, you've got bruising, there's other symptoms going on.
Yeah, well, it's where the GP thinks there's something not quite right here. I need imaging. MRI is zero radiation, and the price is not that different to CT. That it would be an easy step, you know, stroke with a pen done in one day. You know, no cost, lots of benefits. MRI is better than CT for the spine, same for ovarian lesions that are suspicious in ultrasound. CT is not very good for that. MRI would be great. I think the next activity would be to make sure that patients gave informed consent before they had a CT. This is controversial because it's said, even by the regulator, patients might get worried and not have an important CT. I think that's paternalistic. Patients deserve the right to know the risks of an examination and the benefits, and then to decide if that's something that's good for them. Actually, I don't think you can exclude the patient, really. It would be unreasonable, but we have for a long time excluded the patient from this decision. And I think that hasn't been a reasonable approach.
And the question that you need to ask your doctor if they're ordering a CT is, do I really need it? Is it going to make a difference to my care? Can you substitute for MRI?
What's the benefit for me? What important information are we looking for here? What are the risks? And are there alternatives? And written consent is just a little hurdle that people should step over with that makes them recognise that there is a risk here, but it's acceptable or not.
Associate Professor John De Campo, a radiologist based in Melbourne. So as with everything, Priya, it's only do it when you need to.
That's right. And for some people, the benefit definitely outweighs the risk, but it's worth a discussion. I often say to patients, this is what we need, but these are the potential risks. So I think if you have questions, ask about the potential risks and get the information.
I mean, I think one of the most useful questions you can ask your doctor when they're doing any test on you is, why are you doing the test? And is it going to make a difference to how you treat me?
Yes.
if it's not, if it's just to settle down anxiety in the doctor, then you can choose not to have it. It's up to you.
Yeah, I agree. That question of how does this change my management, I think, is a key one.
We asked the Royal Australian New Zealand College of Radiologists for a response to the issues mentioned in John's interview. And if you want to read that, it'll be on our website.
You're with the Health Report on ABC Radio National.